And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions, where in theory, we get to fix some timelines. Ain't that right, Sasha?
No, that is not right. In fact, I, the fabulous Sasha Kaplan, have to deal with the trash chute of a film that manages to screw up like three different timelines. Like, yeah, three. As anybody who follows me on Twitter or has seen my Tumblr know, I have feelings about this movie. Feelings that are not shared by the majority of people that watch this movie. And I will admit, when I first saw this film in theaters, I enjoyed it. I thought it was entertaining, but there was still stuff that bugged me about it. Looking back on this, and just to show you how amazing I am, Michael, I watched the theatrical release twice, and I watched the Rogue Cut. So, yes, thank you for the clapping. Thank you. In case y'all haven't heard yet, we're reviewing Days of Future Past. A film that is so...
Wait. You're telling me that my intro was not specific enough?
Yeah. A film that is so loosely based on the Days of Future Past comic, it doesn't share anything with the comic except the title and the dystopian future. Oh, all right, there's a lot of feels. There's a lot of complaining that I have. There's a lot of problems.
But I will say this, though. This is the second to last film that Bryan Singer touches in the comic book world.
Yeah, I know the last apocalypse. Yeah, I know. Anyway, this other guy did
Dark Phoenix.
So Matthew, so first things first, before we even get started, I wish to Kirby that Matthew Vaughn had directed this film, but he chose to do Kingsman instead, which, like, respect.
Let's be honest, because he got his one film with X-Men, which he always wanted. But he helped write Kingsman.
Again, I have no, like, I totally get it. Mad respect. I loved Kingsman.
I can't wait for the third film to come out.
Separate conversation. We have a lot to get through here. So they brought in Bryan Singer, and Bryan Singer apparently didn't watch the majority of the first class and probably just saw the ending and, like, that scene with Wolverine. Because as we learned in the last set of films, if there's one thing Bryan Singer loves more than anything else in the world, it's Wolverine. Look, I get Hugh Jackman is hot, but, like, come on. Anyway.
Oh, no. So Hugh Jackman is not hot. He is hunky.
He can be both. Anyway. So Singer comes in and, like, tosses out half the shit they developed in X-Men First Class. So let's get into this. We open in New York in a dark future where apparently night is all day long. Charles monologues about, and we see people that are, like, being marched about, like, we see the people with an M on their eyes, like a kid. We see a mutant that will appear later. We also see that there is, like, mutants, and there's also, like, the humans that tried to help them. And this is all, like, as Charles is monologuing. Then we see that a lot of these X-Men are actually, like, a lot of these mutants are actually being murdered. And there's just, like, piles of bodies that are just, like, dumped out into the periphery of what used to be New York City. So we see a kid that looks vaguely like Rogue. He's got, like, brown and white hair and looks kind of, like, mutant-y. And he's, like, rubbing, he's, like, looking for something, and then, like, he, like, moves the dirt away, and there's the X symbol. Okay, so during this monologue, Charles asks, can the future, like, is the future set? And then we start on the theme, like, the weird, like, intro, which is, like, similar to the ones that Singer, that were for X1, X2, and X3. And as the credits sort of continue to roll, the opening credits, we kind of see, like, there's a Sentinel-esque thing going on that we will get to when we actually see the Sentinels. So the credits really are distracting and I think really take away from the tone of the film because it makes it feel kind of cheesy. Anyway, so we went from a desolate New York to a desolate Moscow where a creepy floaty thing is sending equally creepy floaty things down. It's also an inconsistent Sentinel deployment because when we see the Sentinels being deployed later on at the end of this film, in the dystopian future, they deploy differently. So, like, way to be inconsistent. Anyway, we meet Warbird and Blink. Blink and Warbird, or I guess Warpath, actually appear in the Gifted TV show, which is an amazing TV show, and I love it to pieces, and I wish it got a third season. Anyway, so we see Warbird, which I actually had written Warpath first, but it is actually Warbird. Hears the Sentinels coming because he has enhanced senses, and then he and Blink teleport to warn the others. Bishop and Kitty, how do we know it's Bishop? Because it's Bishop, like you can just tell. He's also the only character out of all of these that has an M on his face. So anyway, so they start running, then we see Sunspot, whose name is mentioned literally one time, and I don't think Warbird's name is mentioned at all. And we also see Colossus. So they're gonna face off against the Sentinels, I guess, while Bishop and Kitty do whatever Bishop and Kitty are gonna do. So we see these Ultron-esque, very intimidating, but sort of boringly designed, yet very menacing Sentinels, who are just like, just a smidge overpowered, in my opinion. Like, just a little bit. It's like, it's not even fun fighting them, or I guess watching us fight them. Anyway, so Kitty and Bishop are running off while the others stay to fight. We see Bobby, and as he slides, him and Kitty's gaze crosses. And when I rewatched this with my brother pointed something out that's really funny. So we find out in a little bit that Kitty and Bobby are actually a thing. This is hilarious in because Kitty Pryde is played by Ellen Page, who came out as gay. And she's in a relationship with Bobby Drake in this dystopian future, who also comes out as gay. Not the actor, the character. So this is just doubly funny, and I'm enjoying it. Anyway, so the Sentinels are, it's kind of hinted that they sort of absorb powers or they can imitate powers. And we get like a half-baked explanation for why that is. And I'm not buying it. So they slowly kill everyone as Kitty starts doing something to Bishop's head. So they get to Kitty and then they vanish. And Kitty says something like, "You're too late," or whatever. It's also kind of unclear about who's running these Sentinels and, like, are there actual humans involved? We sort of see some humans kind of later, but not really. Anyway, so we see Charles and he has like a pocket Cerebro, I guess, inside the Blackbird, and he finds Kitty, but we also see that there's like mutants all over the world that are being tortured and like taken and whatnot by like these droid looking people, or it could just be humans in uniform because it's not the Sentinels. So they have a cool plane. They arrived at some very like East, like Asian monastery type of thing that looks like it's in the Himalayas, like an abandoned Shangri-La kind of a situation. Anyway, so Storm and Logan and Charles and Eric are the ones that arrive in the Blackbird. And as Logan like walks down, they actually did a really cool thing with his design where like he has like some gray streaks and he lights up a cigar because he's Logan. And we see that Kitty and Logan are Kitty and Bobby are together. Why do Kitty and Bobby have to be together in this? Like, I get that they dated in the comics, but like anybody who's opened up a Days of Future Past comic knows Kitty ended up with Colossus. So I guess it's to continue the differences between the X-Men that we know and the future that we know, or the X-Men that we know and the future that we're being presented, but it was just kind of annoying. So they explain that Kitty is able to project Bishop consciousness back in time to warn them of impending Sentinel attacks. That way they get out before the Sentinels actually arrive. Question, where the fuck does Kitty have this power from? There is the first F-bomb. There will be others. Where did these powers come from? In the comic, Rachel Gray sends Kitty's consciousness back in time and like keeps the other Kitty asleep so that she doesn't freak out as they escape from the mutant concentration camp. So, like, so, we're given explanation why the Kitty has this power.
So.
The only thing that you need to tell me right now is an explanation for this power.
Calm down, young stallion. Calm down. Yes, I literally called you young stallion. But
I'm a girl.
I know. It's
stallions
okay.
Are male. Anyway, get
anyways,
like I said.
Get to the point. Anyways, so do you know who the story is by?
Chris Claremont.
No.
Oh, you mean the movie story. Who?
Jane Goldman, Simon Kinberg, and I don't know how much was left over from him, but Matthew Vaughn. The screenplay was completely written by Simon Kinberg. I'm just going to let that sit there. So I don't know how much Matthew Vaughn was able to truly contribute to the story, but he is listed as story by along with Simon Kinberg and Jane Goldman.
That all sounds lovely.
But Simon, that's your Kinberg answer about where it came from.
It's stupid as hell, and it makes no sense. It's bullshit. It's pure unadulterated bullshit of the fact that this whole thing ends up being centered around Wolverine and Kitty ends up being sidelined in a comic of that she's a key part of. So that's one. Two, Kingbird is also the guy who does Dark Phoenix, so I don't trust him with Jack. I know that there were rewrites, and it's very clear that Singer had input and, like, or Kim and Kingbird worked it out together. Like, I don't even know what Vaughn's original vision for this was. And it's really sad because Singer basically comes in and throws out just about everything that Vaughn set up. So anyway, Kitty does not have this power in the comics, and this is what we call an X-Men consolation prize, because she's being written out of her own story. And yes, before the fanboys dissent, yes, while Kitty Pryde does go back in time in the comics, she's not the central character of the Days of Future Past storyline because it takes place in the present and yada, 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 but she's still the driving force of the story. All right. So basically, Eric says that this idea might work, that this concept. And so we find out that Trask, not Stryker, was experimenting on mutants and that he created the Sentinel program. This begs the question of how, based on the fact that we see the Sentinels like functional in the past, why is it that the dystopian future only happens 50 years later? It seems like this is the first step, and it's a really big step. So I find it really weird that it takes them 50 years to get to a dystopian future, where realistically, if they have giant robots that can target mutants in the 70s, by 2000, we should all be screwed.
It probably is more based on the technology that they have available to them.
I guess.
Because keep in mind, I mean, look at the technology that you had in the 70s compared to what the technology that you have now.
In our 1970s, we didn't have robots that could target people.
Exactly.
But
so
they
it's but all technology based.
Fine, but we have functional Sentinels in 1973 in this universe. Like, come on. Anyway, this is where
it's comic books, and it's supposed to suspend disbelief, so.
Timey-wimey bullshit is the real title of this movie, and not the good kind. Okay, so Charles tells them that Mystique got a hold of the research that Trask was conducting experiments on mutants. She hunts down Trask and kills him at the Paris Peace Accords, and that killing Trask sends off a chain reaction of the Sentinel program, and we get adaptable Sentinels, and then they, like, kidnap, like, they take Mystique and, like, experiment on her, which, like, doesn't, and then I guess she escapes and ends up rejoining Magneto, and then we get the stuff that we saw in the original X-Men films, but it's just such a stretch, because based on what we know of Trask, there's no way he would have let Mystique go under any circumstances. So this is, okay. Charles thinks that saving Mystique is the key. I'm like, no, the key is to stop Trask from dying and making mutants not seem like a bat, like the root of all evil. I don't really give a shit at this point about saving Mystique. All right, so Kitty's like, this sounds like a great idea in theory, but if I send someone back in time years, which I'm not saying this is something I can do, then, like, your brain's gonna get turned to mush. And Wolverine's basically like, well, my brain is already mush. But no, it's because he has a healing factor. So Wolverine has to do it because his brain is mush anyway. And Logan has to explain everything to young Charles and convince him because he's kind of going through a hard time. Okay. I know the bullshit explanation they gave us for why Wolverine has to go back in time because, oh, well, Kitty isn't born yet in 1973. I don't care. Like, if this is the only, like, okay, let me put it to you this way. The 90s X-Men cartoon also did a Days of Future Past storyline where Bishop goes back in time with a time machine made by Forge. So maybe instead of wasting characters like Warbird and Sunspot as glorified cameos, you have Forge, who could have sent Kitty back in time. This would have been way more interesting because 99.99% of this film and Wolverine's role in it can be fulfilled literally by anybody. Thus, giving the reason why Logan has to be the one to go back in time is pretty much bullshit because it's comics. You can do whatever. It's a comic-based adaptation. You can pretty much do whatever you want. All right. So basically, Charles and Eric tell Logan that you have to convince younger Charles. Oh, and by the way, you also have to bring me on board, because you're going to need both of us. And really, no, Logan, Logan doesn't. Like Magneto basically does a couple things, like does nothing, and then shows up at the end to screw everything over and save, and then ends up being like half responsible for the situation. Anyway, we'll get to that when we get to it. I have so many feelings. All right. Where were we? So
you're continuing to lose your shit on this film.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're gonna hate me for the Nerdy Notions description for this episode.
Watch as Sasha loses her shit on a very painful movie that I take far too personally.
So I'm just gonna read this to everybody real quick. So the caption for this episode is, in today's episode, Nerdy Notions, join Sasha and Michaels to continue their journey through the most contentious X-Men Fox Universe film as Sasha loses it as they discuss X-Men Days of Future Past. I can't put curse words in the description on the website.
Fine. Warning, there will be more F-bombs because
I've already put the NSFWs.
All right.
On, sweetheart.
Anyway.
I've already taken care of it.
So Logan goes in and he'll go to the end. Like, Kitty tells him that, like, the timelines will move simultaneously until the trigger moment is changed. And then Logan will somehow be the only person to remember the new timeline, which is kind of a cop-out in my opinion, but fine. Because, like, if the new timeline sets, then he never... Anyway, this is where you get a time travel headache. But all right. So one thing they do is Logan just basically lies down on the slab. And I'm going to preface this now. The first thing I thought of when he lay down, I'm like, you should probably strap him in. But no, they don't do that. That's too complicated. Anyway, so Kitty tells him to, like, think peaceful thoughts if things get hairy. So Logan wakes up in 1973 with a girl. And he's naked. Because apparently they were going to have him. Apparently, originally they were going to have him wear shorts. And Hugh Jackman was like, dude, I don't know how it is in America, but in Australia, if you're waking up next to a beautiful woman, you're not wearing pants. So we get to see all of the butt. In case you forgot, in case you blocked out X-Men Origins and forgot what Hugh Jackman's butt looks like, you can look at it now here.
Boom, chicka bow wow.
Anyway, so he wakes up. And there's some mobsters who I guess he's supposed to be guarding the boss's daughter and not fucking her. So, all right then. So Logan tries to reason with them and we see that he actually has bone claws, which automatically erases X-Men Origins even more out of the timeline than already. So kudos to that.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, everything that's happening now at this point in 1973, you've eliminated... Now First Class becomes the first film in this entire saga at this point now.
Which is really frustrating because as we discussed in First Class, like the timelines don't align perfectly anyway because the First Class is supposed to be a reboot.
But the thing is though, is that with First Class, if you put everything together, First Class now at this point supersedes everything. Origins Wolverine is now gone because of this fact, because of what we see happened to Wolverine at the end. But also at the same time, it takes us up to the point of X2, or post X2, but right. not X3.
But then
because they undo the events of X3.
I know, but then you also have Apocalypse.
Well, you had to explain how he was going to become bald. Come on now.
Anyway, I honestly did not care. In the great scheme of things I care about when it comes to X-Men, that is like at the bottom of the list right
there.
You noted
my sarcasm, though, with that, though.
Yes, I did. Okay. Thank you. All right, so anyway, Logan takes their keys and money, and he goes to, he's in New York, so he's going to go see Charles. Meanwhile, in D.C., Trask is testifying in front of a Senate subcommittee, and he is talking about his Sentinels and about mutants, and he actually quotes from Charles's dissertation that we hear first in First Class. Should be noted, Chris Claremont has a cameo here. He is one of the senators on the panel. Anyway, so the senators basically say, nope, we're not funding this. This is a waste of money. And then we go to Saigon. So this is like at the end of the Vietnam War. And we see there are some, oh, I'm sorry. We're actually literally in Saigon. So a colonel arrives to speak to some soldiers or troops or whatever in a special tent. And we see that everybody's a mutant and Havoc is in there. And the colonel like gives him a wink. So the mutants are going to be sent to Trask Industries for testing. And then we have, because we cannot have a movie without him, we have another member of the Stryker family to deal with. That, yes.
Yeah, well, that's who becomes the William Stryker,
yes.
though.
I know. There is such a thing as oversaturation of a character.
Well,
so
if you're going to rewrite
the
timeline, might as well use the one from First Class that they briefly introduced.
Anyway, we're all going to have a time travel headache by the end of this review. So Major Stryker is there. He's going to be the one to take them. We see that, shockingly, we find out that the colonel is not actually a colonel. It's Mystique. And we also see a couple of the other mutants. We see the person with the tattoo that we saw in the dystopian future. He's like a top mutant that can like give other people toxins or something because he makes some of the doctors throw up. We see a pufferfish looking dude and we see Havoc and Toad. So basically it's Mystique. She's there to free them. Alex asks, there's a point where like she has Stryker pinned down or like she's choking him and Havoc blasts him. And Mystique goes, oh, I had it. And he's like, I know. And so anyway, she gets the mutants on a plane. And Alex asks her about Eric and then she says she's on her own. And they get on a transport home and Stryker gets to boohoo because he doesn't get the mutants. Back at the X mansion, which seems to have been abandoned, and it's not a school, Logan arrives to the mansion and Hank opens the door. And Hank, to Logan's surprise, when he identifies himself as Hank McCoy, is like not blue. So he says like, oh, I'm here to see Charles. And they kind of scuffle for a bit because Logan lives to piss off other characters. And Charles stops Beast from doing anything significant to Logan. And they make a crack about Logan looking familiar because they've met him before. Well, at least Charles has. So Logan tries to tell him about that he's from the future, that Charles sent him. He's like, I don't believe you. And Logan shares an anecdote that I guess Charles shared with him about how he first discovered he had powers when he was 9 and thought he was going crazy until he realized later on, a few years down the line, that the voices weren't in his head. He was hearing the thoughts of other people in their heads. Anyway, so apparently they have to like save Mystique. Raven won't listen to Charles. And then they gotta go get Eric. Hank says that Charles lost everything. That I guess after the first semester, the Vietnam War started and some of the older students got drafted and then the teachers got drafted. And there's something about how Charles keeps hearing the voices of the dead, which is not his power and makes no sense. And then later on when he has a trigger and like his powers start coming back also makes no sense because his powers have a range. They're not being boosted by Cerebro. The only heads he can listen to are the people nearest to him, which is you live in a compound isolated from your neighbors. The only thoughts you have to listen to besides your own is Hank and Logan. Also, there's a crack here where Charles was basically like, oh, I'm going to leave you with the same, I remember you now, and I'm going to leave with the same parting words you gave me. Fuck you. That's two.
Well, he actually said, fuck off. That's three.
Or fuck off, whatever.
But actually, but here's the thing, though. Hank openly tells, you know, Logan that, you know, Charles is on this medicine that he created to help him be able to walk again. And as a result, you know, takes away kind of his powers. But well, all that stuff that you just said, like hearing the dead and stuff like
yes.
that.
Yes. It's also
that could all be side effects of the thing.
He's over, except the voices started before he started the serum, because Hank says the voices started and then Hank had developed a serum. It also should be noted that Hank takes just enough to like look normal, whereas Charles is basically a drug addict and over medicating. Okay. So finally, Hank wants to help. Charles says he wants to help Raven, and Logan says they need to get Eric because they sent him together. Charles is really pissy at Eric, like a little too pissy. But apparently Eric is a monster and he's in a super prison because, get this, he killed JFK. So where is he placed in a prison? Is it somewhere in the woods in the middle of nowhere? Nope. It's in the dumbest place possible. It's at the bottom of the Pentagon, which, like, I get it, but it's just so stupid. It's so stupid. I'm sorry. So apparently the reason they know that Eric killed JFK is because, I guess, the bullet curved and Eric has always been obsessed with guns. I'm like, he really hasn't, but okay. So they need resources, and Logan says they knows a young man who grew up outside of DC who can help. And obviously Cerebro's out of the question. Meanwhile, with Trask, Raven comes to his office pretending to be him and finds like a secret, like sub-laboratory thingy, secret like thing behind the painting, where it looks like he killed everybody we know from the last movie, except the characters we already saw. Because we see Azazel is dead. I'm guessing the Wind Guy's dead too.
Yep.
The Angel Girl is dead. And I'm like, are black people not allowed to be like in the X-Men as like big characters because they only just get killed? Like, what the hell? I know we have Bishop.
Well, you gotta bring that up with Bryan Singer.
Fuck Bryan Singer.
Because he let Storm live, and that's about it.
They all die in the movie, and then they all come back. But anyway, oh.
Well, no. All right. She survived the first three films that he did, or that he was a part of.
Oh, okay. I guess his movies are only allowed to have one black character.
Yeah.
Except for this one, where you have two, but they never exchange dialogue, and are only there to just be named characters. Anyway. So we go to Mystique is basically like ready to kill Trask because he killed all her friends. And so she leaves. She goes to the Maximoff house. Oh, meanwhile, at the Maximoff house, Peter's mom opens the door and she thinks they're cops. Peter is not. So, okay. Context. At the time, Marvel, and because of the rights of, like, the way the rights were made between Fox and Marvel, it was kind of iffy whether Marvel could use Pietro and Wanda in upcoming Age of Ultron, which was released a year after this film. So, technically speaking, yeah, at the time, because stupid retcons, Wanda and Pietro were mutants and children of Magneto. But 99.99% of their stories were in relation to like the Inhumans and the Avengers and had nothing to do with the X-Men. So I guess Fox and Marvel had some negotiations and reached a compromise. Marvel got to use Pietro and then they killed him off, and Fox got to use Peter. I use air quotes because this is not Pietro. Like, if we're talking about like characterization, this is more like this character is based more on Wanda's son Tommy than he is on Pietro. starting from the like goggles and the fact that he's like a thief. Not that Tommy in the comics is a thief, but he had some trouble with the law. And he's very sassy and like very, 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 very fast. And this all feels more like Tommy than Pietro. But anyway, so they go to Peter's house and Peter's a klepto. There's like ho-hos in the fridge. He's got a Pac-Man or like one of those like classic arcade game things. Anyway, so Hank comments like, is he a teleporter? And Logan's like, nope, he's fast. So they're like, Peter says something like, why should I help you? And Charles goes, cause you get to break into the Pentagon, you little klepto. Like, all right then. So they go on a Pentagon tour and I'm just laughing at like tours of the Pentagon. Those were a thing. So they got into the Pentagon as part of the tour. Peter pretends to be a cop or one of the officers or whatever. But ultimately he brings like a crate of food thing that's like slid into this thing to give to Magneto. And there's a note that says, mind the glass. So Peter uses his powers to vibrate the glass and break it. And he does this thing where he actually holds the back of Magneto's neck and says, so you don't get whiplash. And they zoom through the hallway into the elevator where the security officer, he duct taped to the wall, is there. That was pretty funny. So they get out and the first thing Charles does is he punches Eric in the face. I'm like, are you pissy because he killed JFK? Like, this is a lot of anger and resentment accidentally shooting you or accidentally diverting a bullet that shoots you. Like, okay then. So the guards arrive. Peter does this cool slow motion thing, shenanigans. Okay. I actually hate slow down, like the slow-mo use of fast. If a character is supposed to be a speedster, I don't want to see the slow-mo. I really, really don't. I actually hate it because it ruins the fun for me. Here, especially because like the way that they shot the scene, which was very cleverly shot, don't get me wrong, it's like there's times where he just stops, but the action is still slowed down around him. And it's just like, I didn't appreciate it. Like I can't quite articulate why this scene irked me. I know a lot of people love this scene, which like is totally fine. I understand why.
It's a funny scene.
I can't. Anyway, so basically everyone gets out. Peter doesn't go with them to Paris because
he did his job. He did his job. He's good.
If you're gonna go save the world, you need all the reinforcements you can get. But apparently Peter being a side character will repeat in Apocalypse and in Dark Phoenix. So anyway, they get on a private jet and go to Paris. The private jet is actually very nice. And as Eric gets on the plane, he like sees a newspaper and he tries to get it. And Logan puts his claws down. And Eric says, imagine if they were made of metal. I'm like, oh, he knows what would have happened if they're made of metal. So Logan tells Eric that he and Charles sent him from the future. Charles is broken and whiny, and Eric apparently took what mattered most to him, which was what exactly?
Raven.
What did Eric take from him?
Raven.
But he let her go!
Exactly.
Eric didn't steal her. He didn't kidnap her.
But the reality was is that even though he gave the okay verbally, in his heart and in his mind, he did not want her to go.
Okay, fine, but it's not really Eric's fault. If anything, it's Charles's fault because he created an environment where she couldn't be herself, which ultimately led her to Eric. So, like, he's honestly, and then he starts whining about how Eric abandoned him. I'm like, he's not your boyfriend. Like, he doesn't owe you anything. Like, what is this? What? Anyway, so Eric is also dealing with the loss of their fellow mutants. And so he lists them off: Angel, Azazel, Emma, and Banshee. So let me put this to you. Bryan Singer literally killed off all of the like other mutants that were in First Class that weren't Havoc, Charles, Eric, and Mystique, and Beast. So Angel and Azazel are gone because we saw they were Trask experiments. And so are Emma and Banshee. Like, why did you kill Banshee? What did he ever do to you? Like, that sweet little child was adorable and I loved him. Why? And I guess the, so some are dead, others were experimented on, and Charles did nothing. So, so the plane gets going, haywire because Eric is pissed now too. And Charles and Hank were hiding and they abandoned everybody. So like if Charles, I guess Charles was blaming, you could make the argument that Charles was blaming himself for everything, which he really should be, I guess. But I'm just not here for Charlie's pity party. I'm not. Anyway, so the plane gets back to normal. Wolverine says that Eric was apparently always an asshole, which, like, he's... I don't understand why this action here, the scene, actually makes Eric look like an asshole. Because he's right. Charles was hiding, not using his powers, while everything was happening. Like, Eric couldn't do anything because he was in prison for, I guess, killing JFK. But, oh, apparently he was trying to save him. Because JFK is a mutant. Okay, this was stupid. This was really stupid and unnecessary. It would have been more interesting if maybe Eric got disillusioned with everything and things weren't happening and he was like fighting this fight, but he was constantly losing his friends. So he just like goes off the grid. That would have made more sense. So then you kind of have to, both of these characters who feel this enormous guilt over the loss of their friends coming together to save the universe. But that would require good writing. Also, side note, what powers would JFK have if he was a mutant? I feel like his powers would probably be his charm, and he would, like, he'd be able to, like, charm everyone into, like, loving, it would explain a few things. But anyway, yeah, so, like, Eric is clearly a survivor here, so I'm not really sure why him pointing out that Charles was basically hiding out while mutants were dying makes Eric the asshole, but whatever. So they go to Paris, where I guess the Russians and the Viet Cong are at a club celebrating, you know, because they won the war against America or whatever. Raven is at the bar, and I would like a person who actually speaks Vietnamese to tell me about what's her face's accent, because at first it sounded really weird to me, but then it sounded better. So I would love someone to actually tell me whether or not Jennifer Lawrence completely destroyed the Vietnamese language. So she says that she's an interpreter and speaks many tongues. She and this Vietnamese officer go to his hotel room. This is where she finds out about the summit. And she wants, the Vietnamese officer obviously wants to have sex with her. She transforms back into blue and she gets the guy pinned down and like seemingly kills him. And then she gets the invite. Couple things to note, Mystique's design in her natural form looks kind of like darker. And I guess part of it is like Jennifer Lawrence wears suit, but it's like mostly around her face that like the makeup is a little bit different. And I know Jennifer Lawrence wore a suit because apparently she was like having issues with makeup. And I'm like, Kelsey Grammer sat in 8 hours of makeup for a 20-second scene. Like, you can deal. So let's see, where were we? So the summit is happening tomorrow. Eric brings a chessboard to play with Charles, but Charles isn't in the mood. This is the part where Eric tells him he didn't kill Kennedy because he was one of us, whatever. So Charles admits that Eric was ultimately right, but Raven is at the center of all of this and out there fighting a good fight. We also get this implication that Raven and Eric had a falling out at some point. I wonder if it was over Kennedy. So she left, I guess, because Eric got inside her head. And I'm like, girl, no. You told her to go. Like, yes, he got inside her head. But he didn't really tell her anything that wasn't true. Like, I'm sorry, but hashtag Magneto was right. Charles admits that Eric was ultimately right, but still maintains that, like, he got inside Raven's head and told her to go, and, like, it was a bad thing. Like, stop. So Raven will murder Trask, and then they'll capture her, and that will lead to them wiping out all the mutants. And that they're going to change history. So they must have captured her multiple times. And this is the other problem with this movie. I understand why they use the older cast, and part of me appreciates the nostalgia factor. And you could theoretically make the argument that this is a different timeline, the past and the future, so that it's actually not connected to the original trilogy, but it is, and so this makes it very confusing. And I still think that the timeline doesn't quite line up before this quote-unquote, like, time travel stuff. All right, so Eric tries to apologize. Charles and Eric play chess. At the Hotel Royale in Paris, this is the official end of the Vietnam War. Trask has a private meeting where he tries to sell the Sentinel program to, you know, America's enemy, the Soviets and the Vietnamese leaders. And he says that there's a new enemy, the mutants, and that he introduces the Sentinel program. There's like blueprints. And he also has a mutant detection device, which we literally never see again anywhere ever. And it's like starts, the mutant rejects, that's what I call our little group of idiots here, also arrive at the summit. So they have this is the genetic guidance system, and there's no human collateral damage. It'll be perfect, because that's how it always works when you tell us there's not going to be, you know, collateral damage. So he has a little X gene detector, and it starts going around the room, and it identifies Mystique in the room. So she knocks one guy into Stryker, then she gets tased, but Eric and Charles arrive with Logan and Hank. Logan has a flashback of Stryker, and because of the PTSD flashback plus timey-wimey shenanigans, he like starts going in and out and going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Trask is still in the room. Meanwhile, Charles promises to keep her safe. Eric tries to kill Mystique. Beast stops him, but a bullet hits her leg, thus exposing mutants. Because at the beginning, at the Senate hearing, we're actually not sure if what happened and with like during the Cuban Missile Crisis, like if everybody knows about it, because one of the senators says it was never confirmed. So Kitty is losing Logan. He's slipping. He ends up cutting her with his claws. So they really, 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 really should have, actually like strapped him in. So Trask gets away. Eric gets the Sentinel blueprints. Mystique is on the film and she then turns into somebody else to escape. There's like a fight where like Hank tries to drown Eric and he's all blue and fuzzy. I honestly don't care. Now Eric says to restrain him. Eric can pull Mystique because of the bullet. He like drags her forward to him. Logan wakes up and there is a funny moment where Logan doesn't recognize Charles because they technically haven't met yet or like really met. And Charles is like, well, your time travel. Nope. You know what? You're on some acid. You got some like really bad acid. Mystique tries to get away. Kitty's hurt, but Stryker gets away. I find it funny that they actually don't call Sunspot in to like cauterize Kitty's wound, but whatever.
Well, if I remember right, what they did was no, that wasn't until later. It wasn't until later when Magneto barricaded the door.
Yeah. Well, this doesn't have anything to do with, like, stopping anybody. It's just more of the fact that Kitty's bleeding now. So, slightly better. This design for Beast is slightly better, actually, but still kind of not quite right. So, Logan returns. He and Charles get away. Nixon watches from the Oval, and Nixon wants to know what the heck is going on. And it's off the record, and he stops the tape recording. So Trask is there. He got to DC from Paris really quickly. Because we're not actually told how much time passes, but I guess it's been several hours now. So anyway, Trask is there. He talks about the mutants and explains that Eric's and Mystique's powers and introduces the Sentinels.
The Sentinels are actually not metal, and they're made out of, like, a prototype material from space or something like that. Tress wants Mystique for research. And Raven, we see that Raven is fine. She's in the hospital. Eric is stitching himself up in, like, a hotel room or something, and he's looking at the blueprints. It's actually kind of creepy, as there's, like, a metal, like hook, because like Hank hits him pretty hard, so he's like stitching himself up with his powers. It was actually kind of a cool scene. And the crime scene investigators collect blood samples from Paris. So look, this is the other issue I have, because I commented about this in First Class. The passage of time is really weird, but all right then. So Mystique grabs Eric at the airport a little bit later, and Eric fills her in about the message from the future. She says that it's Eric's fault, that they have, like, they have your blood down, and Mystique's like, well, whose fault is that? It's enough, like, it's enough for a quick DNA test, but it's, like, not enough to replicate, so, like, don't worry about it, but whatever. So they
we'll get to that point when we see Trask again.
I made this note before that, because I'm smart like that. So they have to strike. Raven doesn't want a war, but honestly, like, I don't care what Raven wants at this point. And Eric asks her, like, are you Raven or are you Mystique? But she wants Trask because something. Oh, she starts hearing voices. Back at the mansion, Charles starts hearing voices again because it's been a while since he took another dose. He can read Logan's thoughts, and Logan says that they need his powers. So Hank brings him a new dose and he put in a little extra, but he doesn't take it. Hank helps him to the study where we see his wheelchair. Trask studies Raven's DNA, and he says that he needs more of it, like her brain tissue, bone marrow, spinal fluid, all of that. That her
That's
genes are the key.
Son of a bitch.
Her genes are the key to mutation. What is up with everybody experimenting on mutants? Pick a new hobby. Shaw, Stryker, Trask. Like, in the comics, Trask is just, like, a warmonger, like, weapons manufacturer guy. Not lab tech guy, but whatever. So this is like basically the key to Sentinels that can adapt. Stryker is there and he's asked about his son, Jason, who is 10. Trask says, Stryker says something like, wow, you really hate mutants, Mr. Trask. And Trask is like, no, I admire mutants. They're like the key to salvation, unifying humanity against a common cause. Ha, 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 ha. So Eric is on, he like pretends to be a member of the crew that's like loading the Sentinels and like, yeah. So Charles and Eric go to a new basement. Oh, sorry, we're in the future. Nope, been a busy, oh, sorry, it should be Charles and Hank. That there's been a, they go to the sub-basements because it's been a busy 10 years. And how we see Cerebro and we kind of see the like, basement the way it looked in the original X-Men trilogy. So this, he puts on Cerebro and it hurts him because, you know,
it's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. So Charles is broken and this whole thing says the whole thing was a mistake. Logan says he was the wrong person to send. No kidding. I know the implication here is that Charles should have been the one to go back in time, but this is this movie being unintentionally self-aware at the fact that Logan was the worst choice ever. Because he really doesn't, again, Logan isn't capable of doing anything in this film that couldn't be done by Kitty or Bobby or Bishop or anybody, really. He's the only one who can make the trip.
Let me ask you something real quick. If Matthew Vaughn was still in charge, how long would it be until he legitimately brought back Wolverine?
I don't know. I have never had this conversation with Matthew Vaughn. I don't know him personally. I honestly would have hoped that we forgot about Logan for a while. Because
which it seemed like it's what he was going to try to do with the whole fuck off thing in First Class. And then when you see, the next time you see him in, I think it's what, Apocalypse? Is it Apocalypse?
Within this timeline, yes.
Yeah, Apocalypse. The next time you technically see Wolverine, Wolverine is in Stryker's base after he got the adamantium added to him, where they've been experimenting on him, and Jean Grey sets him free. I know, spoiler, we're jumping ahead to films and all the other shit. That's nice.
two films? Apocalypse is the next
Deadpool.
Film. Deadpool. Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. So, like, when you think about it, did Matthew Vaughn even really have Wolverine figured into this film?
Probably not, honestly.
And that's the thing I'm kind of coming to. It's
but
like,
again,
because when the Wolverine came out in that last scene in the mid credits, where it's like Charles and Eric were like, "Hey, we need you." That's obviously the preface to this film. Was that added in because Matthew Vaughn left and Bryan Singer took back over and redid everything?
Yeah, yeah. That I think
you're
right.
See what I'm saying on that one?
No, for sure. Which again just makes me hate Bryan Singer even more because he's a twat. Anyway. So Logan says that he was the only one who could make the trip. So sorry, you're stuck with me. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm stuck with you too. Logan was Charles's most helpless student. I'm like, sure, we'll go with that. All right, whatever helps your ego there. Charles looks into Logan's head and can't, it's a pretty damaged mind, but he sees we see kind of flashes of like the past X films, I guess. And he has to look past Logan, and he does kind of like a Vulcan mind meld. So he sees his like future self and basically talks to himself.
Let's be honest, McAvoy and Stewart talking to each other was pretty cool.
I mean, it would have been cooler, honestly, if we got like a Charles and Eric team up and like a Charles and Eric team up. Future, past, future kind of a situation, but whatever.
That would have been cool too, but just the fact that we got the two Professor X's talking to each other, that was nice itself.
So Xavier, so we're going to see, the future guy is going to be Xavier, the past one is going to be Charles. Okay, we're all on that. So Xavier tells Charles that he must show them a better path, that Charles is afraid of his own pain, but he has to feel it in order to become more powerful, I guess. And Xavier gives Charles a pep talk. We see glimpses of like, so this is interesting. So we see glimpses of kids in a school. This is really, really important because that actual scene does occur in the later on in the film at the end. So that he needs to hope. And Hank fixes the generator, which lets Cerebro work again because he broke it earlier. So Trask, meanwhile, Trask Industries train, Charles, Eric gets on and uses the rails to get inside the Sentinels and like activate them or like imbue them with metal or something. It's unclear. So in the future, this is where we get into the Rogue cut. But before we get that, so Kitty is still bleeding, but they need more time. So in the regular cut, Charles is like, I'm sorry, but like, we need more time. This isn't working. In the Rogue cut, Bobby actually tells them that they need to get Rogue. Bobby knows where she is and where she's being held, which is in like the stupidest place ever, but whatever. Bobby tells Kitty that they're going to go get someone to help her. They kiss and she's like, come back to me. And they leave. At the airport, Charles reaches Raven. He's like, come home, Raven. Killing Trask won't stop anything, Raven. Charles possesses, like, different people who all tell Rogue that, like, she needs to go home. This isn't who she is. But she basically has no compassion for Trask, which, like, he really doesn't deserve much. And that Charles can't stop her. So he comes to her that killing Trask will be the start of an endless cycle. She refuses to come. Charles says he'll stop her. And Raven goes to DC. Meanwhile, Hank is watching. So this is, I think, still the Rogue. Hank comes in and says that has like, they like set up there's like a TV tech monitoring situation. In the Rogue cut, we see that Hank is like watching TV. Then where they talk about like the, like what's happening in DC, that Trask Industries is going to make an announcement. In the Rogue cut, we see Hank talking to Charles about like, do I make it in the future? And Logan's like, no, but we'll change that. And this is a scene that actually happens later in the theatrical cut. So in the Rogue cut, as we continue, at the future X mansion is still standing for some reason. And this is where Rogue is being held. So through the pipes and underneath the under the basement, basically, Eric and Bobby get in. Eric, so this scene of them rescuing Rogue is actually just opposed with the past of Eric going to get his helmet. Basically, Bobby wakes Rogue up. Eric keeps, oh, there are evil people still in this dystopian future because they're the ones experimenting on Rogue. So long story short, in the past, Eric gets his shiny helmet. It's in a glass case along with Angel's wing and Havoc's old suit. Meanwhile, in this dystopian future, Eric and Rogue escape, but Bobby dies sacrificing himself so Eric and Rogue can get away. Let's see. The Sentinels kill Bobby. They leave. And the mansion goes up in flames. Mystique destroys Cerebro. Oh, it should be noted that also in the Rogue Gut, Mystique actually goes to the mansion where her and Hank have a steamy makeout session. And then she destroys Cerebro, so they can't track her. They return, so in the future, they return to the secret, like, Shangri-La place, and Rogue apologizes to Kitty and takes her power so that she can take over on Logan. And he says something like, he, like, feels Rogue, because she says, hi, Logan. And Hank sees the destroyed Cerebro, but Hank knows where she's going now. So they need to go to DC. Oh, one important part of the Rogue Cut is that as they escape, there's a Sentinel that, like, attaches to them, but he, like, loses an arm, and that arm then becomes a beacon to let the other Sentinels know where the mutants are. Okay, so Charles doesn't buy Hank's theory about, like, so there's this whole, in the theatrical cut, there, after Cerebro, they go to Hank's lab, where he's, like, monitoring all four channels about, like, things happening, but Hank has this theory, and he's watching, like, a time travel related Star Trek episode in the background of, like, maybe time is fixed and you can't actually change the past. And Charles is like, nope, I'm not buying that. So Logan makes Charles a promise to bring them together. Storm, Scott, Jean guide them that they'll need him and he'll need them as they get on the plane, as they're on the plane. Meanwhile, Warbird hears Sentinels. They've been found and they can't escape. That was one of the other things. Like, if the Sentinels come while Kitty has Logan, like, that's it. There's nothing that can be done. They can't escape because clearly they're no match for the Sentinels. In the Rogue Cut, we see Rogue and Kitty sort of sitting there. So I'll talk about my issues with the Rogue Cut at the end. In the regular cut, Kitty and Bobby are there together. Charles and Hank and Logan arrive at the White House. Logan is shocked that the metal detectors don't go off, which, like, duh, bone claws. Charles searches for Mystique. In the Rogue Cut, Charles actually ends up in, like, a section with other war veterans. And Charles tells the vet that he was a victim. They're like, oh, I lost my legs. Like, I got in this chair because of this reason. And Charles is like, yeah, mine was friendly fire. And he's like, that's the worst. So Nixon gives a speech about the greatest threat, the mutants, quotes Oppenheimer. They reveal the Sentinels. And Rogue is actually one of the Secret Service agents. Eric shows up on a baseball stadium and steals the stadium.
So the stadium is RFK.
Yeah, the RFK stadium.
Yep.
So the Sentinels are approaching in the future. Secret Service agent Raven, Charles tries to, like, freezes her. The baseball stadium approaches the White House. It's actually kind of ominous as it, like, flies over. Charles tries to reach Raven again as she's frozen in place. In the future, Storm tries to slow them down with weather as, like, there's, like, 12 carriers of Sentinels coming. Some of the Sentinels actually can't weather, and one of them actually gets destroyed. Several, I think, get destroyed. Then they start releasing the Sentinels, which, like, it's weird because they get deployed differently at the beginning of the film than at the end of the film, but whatever. Storm supercharges Bishop because his powers are kind of similar to Shaw's that we saw in First Class. And he has a gun that attaches to his powers, which is pretty cool. And so he shoots at the Sentinels via blink portal. So there's a lot of parallels going on between actions happening in the past versus the future, more so than before. Nixon gets pissed at Trask because the Sentinels start moving. Older Eric got the plane moving as a decoy cover and, like, destroys it to kill some Sentinels. Storm, I have something about bomb. Oh, he supercharges the jet with Storm's lightning. Or she supercharges the plane as Eric, like, hurls it. Charles ends up under debris as the stadium falls around the White House. I'm not quite sure what the point of the stadium was, I guess, other than to, like, create a place where no one can escape.
It was essentially
a
barrier.
From.
Yeah, it was essentially, you know, the whole point of bringing in RFK Stadium was that you're creating it where it's impossible for people to escape. Which is smart, you know. If you want to set a point, you want to make sure that the people that you're trying to set a point to can't escape.
Fair. Let's see. Eric barricades the door. Oh yeah. So older Eric gets impaled by the falling debris as he tries to stop it from the plane, and the Sentinels kill Storm. Bishop explodes. Even though he's, like, absorbing the energy, should have been able to, like, release it at them as opposed to just, like, being consumed by it.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, like, with Darwin in First Class. It's, like, maybe it was too much for him to take.
It shouldn't have been, and especially the case with Darwin. But whatever, he takes out two Sentinels, and he's basically, like, it's such a waste of interesting characters because, Wolverine! So Eric barricades the door. Now, this is where there's two different versions of this. In the theatrical cut, as Eric barricades the door, Blink actually sends him inside with her portal. But in the rogue cut, Kitty pulls Eric inside. How she knew he was outside to pull him inside doesn't matter. So, let's see. In the future, this is where we see the line after this scene. We go back to the past and there's a line like, in the future, do I make it? No, but we can change that. Hank goes blue. The Sentinels start listening to Eric. And apparently bone claws aren't quite as useful as adamantium claws. But anyway, Hank's got a Sentinel as Logan goes to Eric. Logan gets stabbed by metal wires and gets tossed out into the Potomac. And Logan is really useless. I'm sorry. Actually, no, I'm not sorry. Logan is useless. So Trask and the president and, like, his cabinet all get into the White House bunker, but the mutant detector goes off on Mystique just as the White House gets some renovations done, where, like, Eric just pulls the bunker out from the house. The front door goes too, and he takes all the guns, and all cameras turn onto Eric. Charles is still, meanwhile, pinned down because, you know, he's back in a wheelchair and he can't do anything other than with his mind. So Eric gives a speech as everyone falls as everyone, like, slowly dies one by one in the future. Eric says that we are the future and basically threatens the world. He tells the mutants that no more hiding, that they must fight together in a brotherhood. And we see the mutants that Mystique actually freed and got them out of Vietnam. Outside, mutants die. Blink, Pertz, Warbird dies. Everybody has, like, really stupid deaths, but whatever. Future Eric laments on wasted time. Bobby, meanwhile, freezes the door. In the past, Nixon comes out to face Eric, and Nixon is Mystique. And because, like, let's be real here, there's no way Richard Nixon would have been this self-sacrificing. So Hank is trapped in a car, but he uses his serum to make himself, like, human so he can, like, avoid the Sentinel. But also so he can, so it's interesting because the Sentinels first were supposed to target mutants. Eric changes them to target humans, thus causing chaos, and that's, like, the trigger point. And then he tells one of the Sentinels, do what you were supposed to do to go after Hank. But Hank is now humanish and can't be detected, so he manages to get out from where he's pinned down by the car to go help Charles. So Mystique shoots Eric with a plastic gun and knocks Eric out. Everything freezes. Charles is in her head again. Talk about saving lives, show them a better path. Charles talks about how he tried to control Raven, but he has faith in her. Bobby dies. This would be a good time to wake up Logan, but I guess they have no way of knowing that he's basically trapped at the bottom of the Potomac and can't actually change the future anymore. But at this point, I feel like I get that the future disappears, but it was just like, it ends up coming off so stupid. Charles gets to Eric because, like, and Hank is able to help Charles. Mystique pulls, Mystique doesn't kill Trask, and everyone in the future vanishes, and then Mystique takes off Charles's Eric's helmet and tells Charles he's all yours. So, Eric leaves without his helmet, and then so does Mystique. So, yeah. Logan, meanwhile, wakes up in the future at the mansion, where everything is fine, the school is bustling. We see that Rogue and Bobby are a thing. Kitty and Colossus are teaching a class. I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's a class on architecture. Hank, I liked his X3 design better. This one is, I think, done to mirror the Matthew Vaughn design and like the one we see earlier in this film, but it just doesn't quite seem right. Storm is alive. We see a bustling school. And this is a reflection in the vision that Xavier showed Charles. Gene and Scott are there too for a 2-second cameo. They're alive! Woo! I'm so happy.
Well, that was the whole point of just erasing X3.
Yeah, I guess. Because but then they screw it up anyway later on, but whatever.
Well, they screw it up in a way, you know, but the thing is, though, is that by doing Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix earlier on, it nullifies the whole idea of doing an X3.
I still think it's anyway, but we got all of my thoughts on my annoyance at the love triangle between Logan, Scott, and Jean and when we did X3. So Logan's happy to see Scott.
And you don't
again.
Even see it anymore anyways after
I know. Movie, so Logan is apparently a history teacher, which is funny, but makes more sense than anything else. Logan needs some help catching up and he goes to see Charles. So it's as good to see everyone, don't get me wrong, it's nice to see everyone, but the characters that we kind of sort of were more interested in learning about, we don't actually know if they're okay, like Bishop, Blink, Warbird, Roberto DaCosta,
Bishop more than anything, isn't that more of a character of the future? Because I remember watching it in the cartoon series that he was more of a character from the future that came from
yes,
the past.
Yes, but technically speaking, it's not the past, it's the future now. So like, I feel like it was unfair to include these characters and establish them and not even let us know that they're okay. So Logan gets, meanwhile, back in the past, Logan gets fished out of the Potomac by Stryker. We see that there's a newspaper, and it says that Trask has been arrested for selling military secrets to the Soviets. World leaders are on the hunt for Magneto, which they're not going to find him. And the Sentinel program has been canceled, and that it says a mutant saves the president. So this actually makes sense. Logan will go to Stryker, thus setting up him getting his metal claws, to which we see him in Apocalypse. Except...
It's just
at the last... possible freaking second, it pans to Stryker and it's actually Mystique, which makes no sense. None whatsoever. Mystique and Logan don't exchange an inch of dialogue. Mystique doesn't even know who Logan is, let alone why she would be fishing him out of the Potomac. Like, it makes no sense. So then there's an after credit teaser for Apocalypse, but anyway. Okay. So, a couple things. The rogue cut is useless. It adds a lot of unnecessary scenes to the film and takes up a lot of time. The rogue cut is actually even more problematic because it shafts Kitty out of her own storyline even more. Because now she just, like, there's a scene where she's just, like, sitting there as there's, like, grumbling going on behind the scene outside of where they are in this room. Like, it was so stupid. I understand that people wanted to see Rogue and all that jazz, and I'm happy for them, but like,
well,
I see
there's
why
also
they made
more
cut.
To the reason of the Rogue cut too. So apparently all these scenes were shot far in advance. And then with Anna Paquin, she only agreed to come back for the film. She wasn't willing to do a cameo unless her character actually had somewhat of an actual role.
Which
they cut almost everything out except for the cameo. And when the
they cut everything except for the cameo.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And when the theatrical version hit, she wasn't happy. A lot of other people were not happy. I think, I don't quote me on this one, but Hugh Jackman might have not been happy about it, because I think he might have liked some of the stuff that they did with her. And so that's why the studio elected to do a Rogue Edition Blu-ray version only, not so the actual original script had more of Rogue in the film.
Yeah.
And it was, and I guess Bryan Singer just cut her out completely.
This is the one thing I will actually give Singer. I'm sorry to Anna Paquin, because I did like her. I like the Rogue as a character. Don't get me wrong. She was one of my favorite characters in the 90s X-Men. But I feel like Bryan Singer just has a hatred for Kitty Pryde that I don't really understand. Because
The hatred is, and that's for the other director too. You know, I forget who the other director was. It's just a hatred towards Ellen Page.
Like, I'm not a big fan of Ellen Page, but, like, what? Also, like, okay, fine. If you don't like Ellen Page, don't recast, like, recast her. Like, don't bring her back. Like, I would have been fine if they recast Kitty. But nostalgia, bullshit, I get it. But still. Ugh. So, the Kitty-Bobby romance was funny. In retrospect, it's actually very
funny.
That was the
other thing.
Because
for the Rogue Edition, it also gave you an insight of what happened to some of the mutants, that they were experimenting on them and stuff like that. It showed them where they were experimenting them too, because they took over Xavier's school.
Yeah.
So it also gave you a little insight of where they're able to pull the powers to put into these Sentinels. So that's the biggest thing that really came out of Rogue Edition, was that little bit of information.
I guess I would have preferred a little bit more world building or a little bit more explanations of things, but I don't get to be happy in X-Men movies. So this is like a continuity nightmare for me, because like, I know it cancels out X3, but those things still happened, and there's inconsistencies between First Class and the first X-Men film, which I guess sort of makes sense. But because they screwed up Dark Phoenix and Apocalypse, we never really got to see how those elements fit in. But that actually gets me to what this movie should have been about, but wasn't. This movie should have been about repairing Eric and Charles's relationship. But we don't really get to see that. This movie ends up being about Mystique again. And to be honest, I mean, I talked about this in First Class. I don't give a shit about Mystique. Like, I don't. They never establish her as an interesting character, because she does nothing in First Class. Like, she does pretty much nothing. And I think it would have been interesting if Mystique had actually had a band of mutants with her. Like Irene Adler, like Juggernaut, like Avalanche, and they are going to like kill Trask and the president, and then Charles and Eric actually have to team up and stop her. That would have been cool. That would have been awesome. That would have been actually a better reflection of the comic and would have been more respectful to the comic. But we don't get to see any of that.
Interesting little tidbit. Because you and I were talking about Bryan Singer before we started recording, so I pulled all this up. There was a comic book that was actually banned by Bryan Singer from the set.
Days of Future Past?
No. But it actually led to the Wolverine film. And that was the 1982 comic run that was penned by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller.
Is that the one where Wolverine is in Japan?
Yes.
Why would he ban that from the set?
Quote, Bryan Singer had this mandate that no one could read comic books on the set, because when he was creating the first X-Men, he wanted it to be very human and three-dimensional. And he was worried that the actors would come on set with an over-the-top performance if their perception of the comics was two-dimensional. Even though X-Men, as you know, is not. But we were handing them around, and I remember being handed this comic book. It was like contraband. We were hiding
Brian. This was from the first X-Men film. This wasn't for Days of Future Past,
though. But the thing is, though, is that this led to the Wolverine, our last film. So that's actually how we end up getting the Wolverine. Now, bring that to this film, Days of Future Past. If Bryan Singer is going to ban comic books from the set of X-Men and X2 and X3 and stuff like that, what's going to be banned from the set of Days of Future Past? Oh, why not the comic book that is the movie's namesake?
Yeah, obviously.
That was the reason why I brought that up. Also, apparently,
fuck Bryan Singer.
Which is funny that you just said that, because the funny thing is that when they're doing X-Men 2, and this makes me wonder why anyone would work with him again, Bryan Singer reportedly left Hugh Jackman bleeding after a botched X-Men 2 stunt.
I thought that was an X-Men 1, actually.
No, X-Men 2.
Oh, well, that's still pretty
so
bad.
So apparently it's one of the things where even Halle Berry has talked about.
Yeah, that he was unprofessional. He wasn't on set. He would bring random people to the set. Like
some crew members had taken some drugs on set, including a Singer, and they made Jackman do the stunt. However, you will find this funny, though. In the next X-Men film after Deadpool, which is Apocalypse, Hugh Jackman does kind of get a little bit of quote-unquote revenge, because he actually kills Bryan Singer in Bryan Singer's cameo in X-Men Apocalypse.
Not nearly as satisfying, honestly.
Not nearly as satisfying, but it is kind of funny.
It is kind of funny.
So, real quick about cast... there's really nothing major cast-wise. We know
who... Other than Peter... Yeah, we know everybody.
Yeah, we know who everybody is. One name that I bring up is the woman who played Blink, which is Bing Bing Fan. The only thing, and I'll say this, if you haven't seen it, it's called The Twins Effect 2, also known as Blade of the King, over here in the States. It stars her in that film with... it's a Chinese film. With Charlene Choi, Jillian Chung, one of my favorite actors of all time, Donnie Yen, Jackie Chan, and Jackie Chan's son, J.C. Chan. This is the first time Jackie actually acted with his son.
Uh-huh. I'm very happy for him.
So I wanted to bring that up because it's a cool thing. Cool. Outside that, there's not a lot. We know who everyone is.
Yeah. Like the guy who plays Warbird was just in Julie and the Phantoms.
The guy who played Trask was Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, we know. Anyway, we know this cast. Like at this point, there's no point in really discussing the cast because we've seen them. We know them. There's no really standout characters.
I think the biggest thing cast-wise, and this was the big coup at the time, was Peter Dinklage. And that was strictly because Game of Thrones was going on.
Oh, okay, don't care about Game of Thrones. But, like, no, I think Dinklage, it was either Bryan Singer or Peter Dinklage actually said that, like, casting him, like, making him as play Trask is actually kind of really interesting, because I think Peter Dinklage talked about, like, how he was sort of a mutant because of his dwarfism, and, like, that... you know, he's sort of jealous of mutants, and like that's an interesting driving force for the character of Trask. So that was the one thing I was like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. And like, he does a great job playing Trask. Like, the actors and their acting is not the problem of this film. It's the shit writing, the inconsistent storylines, and the obsession with Wolverine. Like, Wolverine, I've said this, I'm gonna say it again, he does nothing for this movie. He doesn't add anything significantly unique. His powers aren't even that useful in this film. Like, really?
Yeah, and it's actually noted here that when Matthew Vaughn was going to direct this film, he was going to make this movie a direct sequel to First Class.
Which it should have been.
And have it set in the 1970s, which technically it was. Early ideas included an opening with the Kennedy assassination being caused by Magneto and mutant encounters set during the Civil Rights Movement and the Vietnam War. However, when Singer took over, he integrated these concepts into a viral marketing campaign to set up the action of the movie in this alternate history.
Except for the civil rights thing.
Yeah.
And mostly the Vietnam thing.
In this alternate history, Magneto is arrested and imprisoned for the assassination of Kennedy, but maintains his innocence. The bent bullet theory, a reference to the real-life magic bullet theory criticized by conspiracy theorist, holds that the Warren Commission determined that Magneto manipulated Lee Harvey Oswald's bullets to kill the president in retribution for the murder of mutants Azazel and Tempest. Though in the movie, Tempest was codenamed Angel by the CIA conspiracy theorists. Based on Magneto's testimony, insists, however, that Magneto had tried to prevent the murder of Kennedy and that the true shooter was not Oswald, but Mystique in disguise, who, with the help of Emma Frost, framed Magneto and manipulated Jack.
Yeah, Green okay, I'm sorry. That's way too much time. Wait, yeah, I get.
Yeah,
I,
but
I
that's the thing. That's the whole
marketing and the.
Yeah,
yeah.
That,
I so don't.
That's
care.
Everything that Singer did. He took Matthew Vaughn's initial idea.
He and took a few concepts that I think, had they been put into a film, they would have seen they didn't really fit. Because I think this whole subplot of Magneto killing Kennedy just—it's stupid. It's unnecessary. Like, you don't need to tell me that Magneto is capable of killing a president. Like, we know. We've seen him in action. This is stupid. Honestly, like, the more I watch it, the angrier I get, honestly. And it's also very evident that Bryan Singer didn't actually watch the first movie. He watched, like, a couple scenes, or maybe somebody gave him, like, the rundown of this film. And it's really sad that he doesn't use anybody, like, not even Emma Frost, which would have been a really interesting character to actually, like, come in and deal with Charles, maybe, or, like, do like, something. I hate this movie.
So according to this, Bryan Singer based the time travel in the movie on string theory. Until an object is observed, it hasn't really happened yet.
That was evident with the whole parallel timeline thing.
And then also according to Singer, he had a two-hour discussion with James Cameron about how to make the time travel concept feasible and workable within the movie. The concepts the two discussed include quantum physics, alternate universes, and string theory.
Fuck both of them. Like, honestly, like, it's just, I can't, I don't have the patience to hear more of this bullshit. Like, this movie does what all of the other X-Men films did. Magneto is the bad guy, and, you know, it's there's so many missteps. Like, Logan in the water while Kitty is still projecting his mind into the past. Eric being the bad guy, like, and it's just like, oh, apparently Juggernaut was almost in this movie, but they actually replaced him with Stryker. Would have been interesting if, like, Juggernaut was working alongside Mystique. I do have a note about the string theory and time travel, but, like, it's time travel. Like, there is no realistic time travel because no one's done it yet. Let me finish. So, like, I don't care string theory, quantum theory bullshit that was used. Their mechanism for time travel was poorly conceived and was not really well reflected. It wasn't even reflected in the comic. It's like Bryan Singer read the Wikipedia entry on the Days of Future Past comic and decided, well, this is good enough. Like, fuck him and fuck the people that wrote the script.
So, real quick, what was the working title for this film?
It was something to do with a cat or kitty. Hello Kitty. Which is just so insulting. I'm sorry. You shifted Kitty out of this entire movie. Like, and like I said this at the beginning, their excuse for why Kitty couldn't be the one to go back in time is bullshit, because, like, oh, Kitty can't be the one because of this mechanism of time travel. Like, do you know how many X-Men have time traveled? Like, really? It's such a bullshit excuse. I cannot even.
So this was the second film that Stan Lee did not do a cameo in.
Oh yeah,
he was offered a cameo but opted out so he could attend Fan Expo Canada in Toronto instead.
Whoopty freaking do. This is the other thing. Like, Bryan Singer apparently based Trask on Hitler, which, like, the whole genocidal thing is not exclusive to Hitler, but okay.
Yeah,
Bryan Singer is as good a director as he is a historian, which is none at all.
Yeah, Jason Fleming was originally set to reprise his role of Azazel when Matthew Vaughn was still set to direct, but when Vaughn left...
Which would have made sense, but then Singer showed up and ruined everything. But,
well,
like,
when Vaughn left, the storyline was dropped completely in favor of the time travel and crossover storyline, and Azazel's role will cut from the film to accommodate.
That's literally
characters.
What I just said. Yeah. Anyway, you don't have to read the whole IMDb. Please don't.
I'm actually skipping around.
We don't need to, because I have my own notes here. So, Brian, let's see. So, the romance, there was, like, a potential here that should have been about, like, Wolverine and Storm. And I guess there was a scene that was filmed, but it was cut because for time. I'm like, you could have cut like a couple of other things in here and it would have been fine if you included this Wolverine and Storm thing, because I said in the X3 review that like Wolverine and Storm had legit chemistry, and there is one alternative future in the X-Men timeline in the 1990s cartoon that would have like where they were together. Like, it would have been so interesting.
So apparently Rachel Summers, Psylocke, Deadpool, Nightcrawler, Gambit, and Jubilee were all supposed to appear in this movie, but were all cut out for running time purposes.
Yeah.
I don't know how Deadpool, Psylocke, Gambit. I don't know how
some
of those characters.
I don't think that's true.
To Bryan Singer.
Fuck Bryan Singer. I don't give a shit what he thinks.
I don't know how any of those would have worked in this film though.
Yeah, so Kingbird said that this movie was apparently about hope and second chances, but like, hope for who? Humanity that we don't connect with? Second chances for who? For Mystique? Like, we know how Mystique ends up. Like, this is not a second chance for Mystique to like do better or be better, because we don't really see her do anything of value, honestly, in any of these films.
So let me ask you
One second. And then, like, is this then a second chance for Magneto? Because he also doesn't change over the course of this movie. So this is just a bullshit excuse. So now you may ask your question.
Chris Claremont, obviously the writer of the Days of Future Past comic, was brought on as a consultant. How much do you think Bryan Singer even listened to anything that Chris Claremont said?
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, at all. Like, nothing. Like, if I remember correctly, Chris Claremont, like, Kitty was one of his favorite characters. So, like, clearly he didn't listen because he was too busy listening with his heart on for Wolverine. So, like, honestly, also, it should be said that, like, after five movies at this point where we are, this whole Charles versus Eric thing, this battle of the minds and battle of the philosophies, is just so outdated and boring. We get it. Charles thinks humanity is all good for the most part. Eric thinks humanity is all bad for the most part. Like, it's been done. You're beating a broken horse.
So, this is funny. I didn't notice this until I read this. So, the baseball stadium that Magneto brings over, which is obviously Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium. So, the Washington Senators played there until September 1971, and the Nationals played there in 2005.
Okay.
But this movie takes place in 1973, which means the stadium employee laying down chalk on the baseline.
Oh, yeah. Shouldn't have been doing it.
Seemed very odd since baseball wasn't played there at that time. That's kind of a funny thing,
I guess.
Well, that's for your sports people who listen.
Yeah, but like, it's not really relevant to the movie other than like a fun little hiccup, I guess. Anyway.
I'm always okay with that.
Takeaways from this: Bryan Singer cannot and should not ever be allowed to touch an X-Men property or any comic book related property for that matter. I don't care if it's Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, Dynamite, Xenoscope. Like, he just shouldn't do it.
How many adaptations of Claremont's Days of Future Past comic have been made?
A couple. So we have this film, we have the 90s X-Men cartoon.
Yep.
Wolverine and the X-Men was sort of had a subplot about that as well. There's probably something video game plotty related.
Nope. There's only four.
Which, what am I missing then?
You had X-Men the Animated Series in 92, Wolverine and the X-Men in 2008, the Superhero Squad show in 2009.
Oh, give me a break. Nobody remembers that show.
No,
nobody
I didn't even know the show existed. And then the film.
And like, it should be noted that like a lot of these film adaptations are borrowing by and large from writing that was done by Chris Claremont, with some exception. But to be honest, $5 says that when they brought him in as a consultant, it just meant they paid him money and he had a cameo. Like, I'm sorry. I hope Chris Claremont listens to this podcast and emails me or sends me a message through Twitter or whatever social media he's on and tells me what consultation he actually did in this film. Because I have a very hard time believing that his contributions were that Bryan Singer listened or gave a shit. Because the only thing I understand about this man is that he's a piece of shit that actually doesn't give a flying fuck about comic books or the content they're based on. because only thing he cares about is like four characters and everybody else is a glorified cameo. And unfortunately, it seems like he set the stage for other directors, looking at the folks that made Dark Phoenix and Old Man Logan, continue on this trend. I got through this. I survived. So fuck this movie. Fuck Bryan Singer and anything he touches, especially if it's a comic book related property, because he shouldn't be touching it. So at this point, Mike, can you tell us how this movie did?
Do you promise not to burst a blood vessel?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I know it did well and is considered a good film, so like, just lay it on me.
So, X-Men Days of Future Past clocked in at 2 hours and 12 minutes. And has
Which is, I think, 20 minutes less than the Rogue Cut. Sorry, had to add.
Yeah. And it clocked in with a rating of a 7.9 out of 10.
Is that higher than First Class?
Believe so, yes. Let me find First Class real quick.
Okay, look, if you're a person that has never touched a comic book and has never watched the original films, like, okay, I get it. Like, it's at least, I can see the argument that this is a solid flick. But the timeline doesn't match up and is all screwy.
So First Class was a 7.7.
Okay, it's not a significant difference. See, I didn't pop a blood vessel. I don't think this movie deserves a 7.9, but whatever. I'm so done with this movie. There's probably things that I've left out, but I'm just so angry that, like, I can't angry anymore.
And just to put in perspective, the first two X-Men were, like, 7.4s.
All right, so it beat the original two. So, you know, kudos there, I guess.
Yeah, and then Last Stand was a 6.7. So, like, generally the films have been like a 7.4 up, with the exception of Last Stand and Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
It doesn't go back under 7 again until we hit Apocalypse.
Well, I'm glad I have a surprising reprieve from Apocalypse.
You get Deadpool next week.
Apparently, yeah. So I'm okay.
Is technically part of the Fox.
Yeah, X-Men universe. It's fine. It's part of the X-Men universe. It's all fair. So
we get to go R-rated.
This review is already R-rated. But anyway,
I know.
So,
I've already did all the changes on the website while you're having a knip shit.
These are all valid criticism. Fight me. But anyway, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on the social medias at thelindenbaum75 on Twitter, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, the website at txhthockey.com, and obviously on Twitch, Sunday, Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursday nights from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time at twitch.tv/themichaelx75, and obviously for this show, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions.
And you can find me at geekgirl101.tumblr.com on Tumblr, obviously, Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan on Twitter, and of course on my website where I review comics, which is geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. Please tweet to me. You can message me privately on Instagram or on Tumblr. Let me know what you think of this review. I know I have a few people that will be tuning into this review because I kind of hyped it up on Twitter. Hopefully it lived on to the hype. And join us as we wave goodbye to any semblance of a fourth wall, where I have to deal with some very uncomfortable imagery as we delve into Deadpool. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.